It's time for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 3 years has shared with us her decades' research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative and judicial processes in America. And now, here's Mae.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. And it's January the 27th, 1975. And this is number 181 in Dialogue Conspiracy. Before I begin the regular program, I want to announce for the local people again that the university course at Monterey Peninsula College will begin in a few weeks. Humanities 195, Ray Fabrizio from the English department, and I will be teaching a course on the assassination of Robert Kennedy and President John Kennedy. It'll be called Research Project into the Assassination of the Two Kennedys, and by applying some of the principles or the methods of assassinating these two men and covering it up, you can apply this to other conspiracies and assassinations. If we do a thorough job of instructing you into the way this assassination or the assassinations were taken off, then you should be able to follow the same logic or the same method of investigating future assassinations and conspiracies, hoping they don't continue in the same vein. But they are taking place all the time, and it's a good background on conspiracies. As Monterey Peninsula College here in Monterey, if you're in Salinas or at Santa Cruz or Watsonville, wherever, and you want to come down, you can take it as an auditing course, or if you're local, you can get 2 units of credit in the humanities department. I want to talk today about a newscast that was on TV this week, the NBC Evening News, and it came so fast I can't recall whether it was Thursday or Friday. I believe it was Thursday. I very seldom watch the evening news. I take 8 papers a day and many magazines, and I don't have much time for the commercialism of the evening news, but I did watch a section of it this last week, just on time to hear Robert Vesco talk. He was part of a broadcast he gave in Costa Rica. It was a one-hour television broadcast down there, and the evening news gave just a flash. And he's currently a refugee from justice. The U.S. government wants Vesco back. They want to pry him to this country on criminal charges stemming from illegal $200,000 contribution to former President Nixon's election campaign. But while Vesco was on the air justifying his position, he announced that vaguely, or the direct quotation was, that the CIA is hounding him and wants him to come home back to the United States. He went on to say the same people are after him that got President Kennedy and moved Richard Nixon out of power. Now, maybe those of you that saw that, it went by very quickly to get the impact of that message, but I think it's a very important one, particularly in terms of my research, because we all know what Vesco meant when he talks about President Kennedy getting out of power. He didn't mean that Lee Harvey Oswald got Nixon out of power or got Kennedy out. He meant the CIA, and that's what he said. He meant the CIA that killed Kennedy and removed Nixon, wanted Nixon out of power. And this was important for me because I think that a lot of the political assassinations will be coming out. The CIA exposures are just beginning to pour out every day in the mail. I had a toss-up whether to discuss those this week or other matters, and thought I'd put them off for a few weeks. Some of the revelations that are coming out in the exposures of the CIA. But when Vesco is wanted home and wants to blackmail the people that are forcing him home, he does have an alternative, and he's mentioning the fact of the CIA getting Kennedy and getting Nixon out of power. It showed a picture of Vesco with his landing strip, his property. He has a place for jet planes to land, and he has guns and missiles and a small army down there. But actually, his best weapon isn't the guns or the bullets, but the truth about the political assassinations in the United States. This is as good a weapon to protect himself. Everybody else is using it that's involved in the Watergate, hiding the real story in exchange for getting out and not going to jail. I particularly like the VSCO statement, and I bring it up today to share with you, because in The Realist, in 1972, the first article that I published after 8 years of research, the article on Richard Nixon, how Nixon came to power, and on it was called Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped, I mentioned the fact that there were plans to off Nixon at the Republican National Convention in Miami, that Nixon was expendable at this time, and that I didn't realize at that time that he could be moved out through the Watergate exposures, or maybe they fell down in order to get Nixon out of power, but he was, he could be removed from power at the time of the Republican National Conventions. A lot of people, the far right wing, considered Nixon too far left. The military-industrial complex considered him too far left. And the entente that he made with Russia and China were, while they were expendable, they were dramatic ways to be sure of winning the election. In 1972, they could be thrown over later. But I'm sure there's a lot of people in the military that didn't even want a momentary entente of any kind, and that could be sabotaged later. They could blame it on Henry Jackson, and Mr. Kissinger will blame it on him, and the entente will be sabotaged, and they'll blame the Democrats for that. Meanwhile, the election was won on this peaceful entente. The Douglas Caddy, of co-founder of Young Americans for Freedom, over at a Mullen Associates, a public relations office, I mentioned him in my Realist article because his group of far right wingers from Young Americans for Freedom were also against Richard Nixon, and he played a big role in the Watergate, which is indicative of, I mentioned in that first article, of how the far right wing was going to get rid of Nixon. And again, this is important because VSCO says the same people who got Nixon out of power were the same people that killed Kennedy. And in that very first article, I mentioned the extreme right wing, farther right than Nixon, that wanted him out. And Young Americans for Freedom, I believe, is a group that is behind that. William Buckley, the founder of Young Americans for Freedom, is the godfather of E. Howard Hunt's children. He's a CIA agent that worked closely with E. Howard Hunt and the CIA. Tom Charles Houston of Young American for Freedom was one who gave the military his name so that the military industrial wouldn't have their name on the Houston plan. But he's from Young Americans for Freedom, and they're the group that set up that illegal army of the military, FBI, CIA, and police spy network in 1970. Young Americans for Freedom were involved in the Dallas, Texas killing of John Kennedy. Members that formed the Young Americans for Freedom in 62 were brought over from Germany. They were part of military intelligence. I mentioned their names in the first Realist article. And so the plans to get Nixon, the same people that were going to get Nixon and killed Kennedy, I wrote about in 1972. And I think it was very important that VSCO mentioned it this week. Also, Charles Colson mentioned when he went to jail that Richard Nixon is the captive of the CIA, and they controlled him. I read today in the news that Richard Nixon may be brought back to Washington, subpoenaed, to see about who runs the CIA, whether he gave orders or whether they gave orders. There's an article in today's news that he may be called back. The new committees have the power to subpoena Richard Nixon to see whether they controlled the president, and this is what I claim was taking place all along for each of the presidents, that the CIA that was formed in 1947, and particularly since 1950, has controlled the presidents. This is what Charles Colson said, that Nixon is a captive of the CIA. Now, Nixon did get out. He wasn't murdered, but it was the CIA men responsible for the White House tapes. Nixon didn't want those tapes. It's public record. They were forced on him. Alex Butterfield, who is currently leaving the FAA, and Stephen Bull, who's still Richard Nixon's babysitter and controls Nixon so that he can't speak up, are of the CIA, and Alfred Wong of the Secret Service of the CIA received those tapes. It was a wonderful way to blackmail Richard Nixon, and it did remove him from office. Another point is that Andrew Topping, the man who was hired to kill Richard Nixon, had his appointment with Nixon called off in August 72. And those of you who hear this tape in the East may keep doing research in New York City. As far as I know, with my papers every day and my magazines, I've never seen Andrew Topping come to trial. And I think the reason was that he was exchanging money with the Secret Service, and members of the Secret Service are in the CIA, if you're reading the exposures in the last week. Andrew Tobing was exchanging money with the Secret Service in August 72. And they pulled him in and canceled the assassination plans, the appointment in the White House. But I think the reason it was canceled so quickly is that there is a very good possibility that the money that Andrew Tobing had would be linked to Bernard Barker's bank account through the same Mexico foundations to Houston that killed John Kennedy. And it's a shame that that money hasn't been put on the table to see if the consecutive order of that money links to the Bernard Barker bank account. But if the CIA hasn't thrown that away, I'd be very suspicious about Andrew Tobing. He had an appointment in the White House, and I feel one reason to have the tapes going is to know who would be in the room with Richard Nixon at the time and where he is at all times. So if they wanted to murder him, they could. Leon Jaworski had an article in the Houston Post. I just received a copy today, and he was talking about different problems on the Watergate. And he said the biggest mystery to him of all was why Richard Nixon didn't destroy the tape. Well, that's the old Jaworski who helped destroy, or he worked on the Warren Commission and they destroyed. I won't say he helped destroy. He worked on the Warren Commission and they destroyed one piece of evidence right after the other. So he knows what he's talking about. And he couldn't figure out, Leon Jaworski, why Richard Nixon's tapes weren't destroyed. But the reason, I think, was to get Richard Nixon out of power. And my theories about that, and I list them to you, and I have many more reasons to go into this subject, confirm the Vesco story that the same people that killed Kennedy, that moved Nixon out of power, want Robert Vesco back in the United States. And also Louis Tagua, the agent provocateur for the Los Angeles Police Department, revealed in 1971 that the FBI and CIA members, of not all of them, not all the agents, but certain agents of the FBI and CIA, secret army in the White House were planning violence for the national conventions and even to off Nixon. It depended who the candidates were, I suppose, at the Republican convention, at the Democratic convention, rather. If Muskie and Kennedy took the ticket, they'd have to create enough violence and stir to cancel the elections and off Nixon. I'm referring to Glass House tapes, even press, published the book of Louis Tackwood, but these are reasons to believe that the CIA that killed John Kennedy did in fact remove Richard Nixon from power. Well, there was another article in the news this week. As I say, I don't want every program and dialogue conspiracy to be I told you so hour, but we will be referring to the three articles I did in The Realist. And those of you who read my article in The Realist, Why Was Patricia Hearst Kidnapped, can appreciate the articles in the news media this week on the food riots in Los Angeles, the use of the tax squad to prepare for the food riots in Los Angeles. I mentioned in The Realist about the People in Need program. I'll read a few quotations on the air again for you to remind you what I wrote last summer. It showed people fighting in the streets. The food program was a big ripoff and a preparation getting ready for food riots. The news this week, I'm reading quotations from the Los Angeles Times, and I hope your newspaper has had as much coverage as the LA Times did. This is from January 23, 1975. It says, Los Angeles police being trained to quell possible food riots. The nation's declining economy and fear of worse news to come have forced the Los Angeles police to begin a program of training to control food riots. Police Commander Frank Brittell of the Metro Police Division, recently promoted as captain in charge of the Special Weapons and Tactics Force known as a SWAT team. SWAT team came to fame, incidentally, during that evening color television during your dinner hour where the cremation of six young persons took place. And I call this the SLA is the CIA. That was the SWAT team. And Frank Brittell did such a good job, he was instantly promoted after his claim to fame at that particular cremation. As I say, he was immediately promoted from his job. Commander Peter Hagen, also who helped on the scene of the SLA, he was the man who made sure that the public relations office came in before the combat began. Peter Hagen was quoted in the news on this food program. They said more than 500 police supervisors have gone through the program. Plans call for 7,200 100 officers on the force to go through the food control drills. Vertel said, you know, for a while, they had their love-ins and anti-war demonstrations and what have you, and we didn't have anything. What really focused the attention on this need for the police for riots, he says, was the state of the economy. I have to interject, they had love-ins and they had their anti-war demonstrations. I really want to ask, what is wrong with the love-ins and what was wrong with the anti-war demonstrations? The Germans didn't demonstrate against Hitler invading Poland or Yugoslavia or Czechoslovakia or France or many of these Baltic countries. What the people at home didn't know in those days. This time we know better what exactly was wrong with protesting the war in Vietnam, that now this army has to get ready at home. They had their love-ins, and a brutal police force is comparing itself to the early years when American youth were awakened that something was wrong in this country. He went on to say the police are being prepared for major disturbances, civil unrest, the true depression, and people may be out of work. He said, we're trying to analyze it, but it's a little different. We have to have training because the guy across the line from you that you're opposing is your neighbor or your brother. And such disturbances would be more difficult to handle because of the emotions involved. And we hope this training helps to understand people. Now, this is the captain of the SWAT team. Those are made of military men home from Vietnam, saying that the preparation of the members of the Los Angeles Police Department is a little bit different because they may be shooting at their brother or their neighbor who's hungry or they have to cart off. Now, just think about that, how that compares to Nazi Germany, seeing your brother or member of your family or your neighbor being taken off. He went on to say there'll be special drills at all stations, testing and training for reaction to various emergencies, and one of these will be a possible food riot. The chief, he said, Ed Davis, that's the chief of police, said we had to be ready and we will be. Now, the next day, Ed Davis got a little smart alecky because they were asking about the food riots, and he didn't want people rushing to the grocery stores because he said America's a great breadbasket. So Ed Davis, the chief of police, played down the food riots, and this is his quote. I think the story got a little bit out of hand, but that's not unusual. It was probably a slow news night, you know, and that's the way headlines are made. In other words, there wasn't anything untrue about the story. It was just that it was a slow night, and what he was doing was being exposed. So I just want to read a few pages from The Realist. Some of you have The Realist. If you don't have it and can't get it at the bookstores, ask your local bookstores to carry it. You can write to me, send a self-addressed envelope, and write for the names of distributors, or you can send me a dollar for The Realist, the article on the SLA, and the footnotes, and I'll send it to you. Box 3904 in Carmel, California. This is the article. The SLA is the CIA, but this is the way the article began. Why was Patricia Hearst kidnapped? The kidnapping of Patricia Campbell Hearst was as vital to the creation of the Symbionese Liberation Army as the murder of Austrian Archduke Franz Ferdinand was the beginning of World War I. Both the kidnapping and the murder were used as an excuse to declare war. The ensuing battles had been carefully prepared and anticipated by the merchants of death. The end goal of the SLA, World War III, is to plunge third world masses into starvation and slavery. We have accomplished this through the CIA in 77 countries. The third world inside the United States is the next selected victim. I might interject that Jack Anderson had an article last week mentioning that the CIA had trained police departments for military dictatorships in 77 countries. So that's right on the button. He mentioned this in January 75. I was writing about this last spring and in the summer. I said America's first political kidnapping was necessary to justify the creation of laws and the development of police SWAT teams. They can be later used against legitimate guerrilla or terrorist activities. Now, this is the reason for the SWAT team that I put in the article. Increased repressions, planned genocide, future starvation, widespread unemployment, inadequate health care and housing are going to necessarily provoke anger and self-defense in the face of death. Washington is preparing its defenses, its punishments, and its armies in the streets. The agencies that control our elections, meaning the CIA and the DIA, and indeed the selections of candidates by bullets and smear tactics, also control domestic productivity and investments, since starvation and unemployment will inevitably lead to violent objections. Provisions must be made to handle the mob, and that is what the SLA is all about. Public sensitivities were tested by well-placed cameras, which invited us to witness the SLA cremation in Los Angeles. How will we respond the next time troops are deployed to control the people? What do you think of the first military operation inside the U.S. based on the feeble creation of the mythical SLA and our first political kidnapping? I asked the question, how will we respond the next time the troops are deployed? And I didn't inject there the promotion of the chief of the SWAT team to begin his troops for your food riots next. How are you responding, or did you respond? Very few Americans, or if any, have responded at all. The article went on to say, until the present time, the CIA was carefully inconspicuous on the domestic scene. It was here all the time, and you'll be reading about it. As I say, it's been coming out in the newspaper all along, but it was fairly inconspicuous on the American scene. The creation of the SLA provides an excuse for the CIA and special police forces like the German Gestapo to step forth publicly and assume control of all law enforcement agencies. The article went on the motives of the SLA, and I listed 15 motives of the SLA. The only ones, this is some more from the Realist article on why was Patricia Hearst kidnapped. I said the only ones to gain from the maneuvers of the SLA were the military and police agencies. They have already spent between 5 and 10 million pursuing the SLA. 10,000 young adults were stopped, searched, and arrested within a three-week period. SWAT police teams are now located in every major city. Police helicopter contracts are escalating. Computerized police information systems will increase, and the CIA will openly take over local police departments where before they hid behind public relations doors. The creation of the fictitious Sudanese Liberation Army was a cruel hoax perpetuated on the American people. And I went on to say that they would be moving America into the scene, so like Vietnam, the armies would be on the streets. The Realist went on to describe Ludlow Kramer from Washington State, director of the People in Need program, who was hired by Randolph Hearst and brought to California. He handed out food in Washington. At the time, there were job layoffs in Washington, but turned the California food program into a ripoff because it was the actual poor people here and not people working for NASA. They were treated a little different. Their food wasn't the slop, 75% fat, that they were throwing out here. Another section on the great food ripoff, because this was a test case on food handouts. In the SLA article, I have a section on the food ripoff. Randolph Hearst spent $2 million on the People Need program. The best quality food was to be delivered. It was stipulated. Ludlow Kramer brought in food that was 75% slop at triple the normal price. Cabbages replaced meat in the bags of food. Food was thrown at people. Some threw it back. Food trucks were hijacked. Conveniently placed cameras photographed the violence at food distribution centers. Some food was contaminated. Some referred to it as hog feed. And CIA agent William Buckley, back in New York State, who works with CIA agent E. Howard Hunt, was writing an article 3,000 miles away that Cadillacs pull up for food handouts. That's how much he knew about it. And these were a few remarks. It's a long article for those of you who don't have it. It was actually the size of a paperback book, 198-page manuscript. And if you don't have it, it's sort of a blueprint for things to come. And I think it's an important article. I think it's equally as important as the Watergate story on why Martha Mitchell was kidnapped. In conjunction with the food riot program in Los Angeles, there were two articles just to show you what I mean if you don't need more support on that subject. One's from the last Sunday New York Times, January 19th, saying the situation is even worse than the statistics, which are bad. Not surprisingly, black unemployment is running far ahead of the white. It goes into the article, The History of Prejudice. In places like New Jersey, 15.9 blacks are unemployed compared to 6.7. In Connecticut, it's 20.7 unemployed blacks to 6.6 unemployed whites. New York City, it's 9.6 unemployed blacks to 7.7 whites. The Civil Rights Act that was handed down in 1964 alleviated certain situations and blacks were hired, but according to the usual depression route, the last hired or the first fired. Black graduates with high credentials are working as secretaries and clerks. They're being laid off, and instead of being allowed to do skilled work, they're forced back into janitorial work with a lot of degrees and credentials. So the Civil Rights Act is not working the way it should, and with a depression and people on the streets, and besides being pouring drugs and narcotics into the ghettos, high unemployment rate, the tax SWAT is getting ready. Now, all of this we know is unnecessary. The economy could go swing into a lot of other positions, and Jesse Jackson has solutions. There's another article this last week on Jesse Jackson, who wants a job guarantee office to be created. Well, poor Jesse Jackson was almost shot at last week, because when you come up with a good idea and it has some meaning and could be put into effect, and you threaten the establishment, you're a walking target, like Martin Luther King and John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy or Malcolm X. Jesse Jackson almost was killed last week, and you can bet it's time for a bullet to fell him by the same CIA that got the others. But in a long column by is Colin McCarthy's article called Back to the Streets, Jesse Jackson talked about the necessity to organize and march again. And I think this is the only solution to genocide, and Dick Gregory agrees too. If there isn't a job for each person, genocide will come to all blacks. If they don't demand jobs, there's going to be genocide. And Jesse Jackson wants a committee in Washington to have Equal Opportunity and Full Employment Act of 1976. He said there isn't any reason it can't be put into power until the people in Washington only recognize the demonstrations. He pointed out that since 1964, there's been no significant national legislation that's been passed in Washington, D.C. And if you notice, 64 was shortly after the John Kennedy assassination. He said there was the Public Accommodation Bill, the Voting Rights Bill, and Open Housing. And since that time, in the last few years, every one of those has gotten worse. He says the gains we made were lost. The war on poverty's come to a halt. The feeding programs in schools has died out. The welfare laws are oppressive. So with a combination of Jesse Jackson saying we have to get back in the streets, and with a combination of unemployment of the minorities up as high as it is, the tax squad is getting ready, and they're getting ready for business. And they mean food riots. That's just what they mean. And the only solution is to stop making those tanks and submarines and that war scare and manufacturing all these weapons and beginning putting money back into the economy, into agriculture. And do you want tanks or do you want tractors? I think it boils down to that. And we have the know-how to arrange this other form of economy if we want it. There is a new Congress in that is more liberal, and it's up to you to let them know what you want and how you want it. Roy Ash is influencing Gerald Ford this week to stop most of the budget for social services. And that's the same Roy Ash of Lytton Industries who helped funnel money to Greece to overthrow the existing government, to stop elections, to put in a military dictatorship. And the quickest way to get a dictatorship in this country are the food riots, strikes, unemployment, and that kind of thing. The people in the White House have encouraged chaos and riots and poverty and starvation in other countries, those 77 other countries I was talking about, and they're bringing the war home. They are bringing it home. And instead of having a military coup here of that type and then working to overthrow it like Greece did within 7 years, it's easier to solve the problems now before all the bloodshed happens. But I think the tax squad in L.A., the story about that is very important, and I hope you do get a hold of the Realist article if you can. Now, last week I talked about Safer California, and I want to go into that most of the time period we have left, because again, I told you last week that this is a project which is national. I said in my Realist article that the California problem, the SLA, is a national problem. I want to talk about Safer California, because in the minutes of the meetings, it comes out that it is a national problem, but $100 million is being put, more than $100 million, is being put into California as a test case for a computerized police state in the state of California. So those of you that get the tape in the other states, this pertains to you too. And you can write to Congress or write to the governor of California and ask, tell him what is happening out here will affect you, and ask him what he's going to do that, about that, because Governor Brown seems to be more reasonable to fair changes, and there's a better chance of working with him. The Safer California was the idea of it came from Richard Nixon in 1969 and John Mitchell. So this is something we have to consider where it came from. Safer California is a state criminal justice study which was started in California. It was based upon, it's based upon the military standard system published in July 17, 1969. I told you about the address of the bulletins that come from the Criminal Justice Committee. Well, they're getting their standard set up of what will make California safer. Remember, what's safer California will be safe for you. You can write the bulletin editor, the Office of Criminal Justice Planning, 7171 Bowling Drive, Sacramento, California, 95823. Now, there's a monthly bulletin, and I'm going to read you a little bit of the goodies from the one issue that I have here. Ask for your monthly bulletin, and if possible, start with Volume 7, Issue 8, October 1974. I didn't see any of the earlier bulletins, and I'm going to get a hold of them, but I understand they're goodies. And I talked to somebody in Sacramento this week who's working for this office of the Criminal Justice Department for 3 months. And he told me that the work is so secretive, they didn't even know what they were working on, and nobody wanted to admit what it was, except that they were supposed to do certain figures and studies and type certain things up. But even the employees don't know or didn't know what they were doing. It's so compartmentalized. Again, it's like Nazi Germany. It's a need-to-know basis, and they're keeping secret from the various employees their role in this fascist system. Write for Bulletin number, Volume 7, Issue 8. Now, in the Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey area, Region M, the state is broken up into these various regions, various lettered regions. We're Region M, 700 Cass Street in Monterey, California, Suite A, 93940, and ask for the roster of members or literature. You can call 373-2961 in the local area here. The Safer California is going to cover five areas and make a whole blueprint to keep California safe from criminals: the criminal justice system, law enforcement, judicial process, correction and prisons, and community crime prevention. And these are whoppers. I have a few notes here from the minutes of one meeting that took place July 29, 1974. The gentleman speaking at the meeting was Anthony Palumbo, P-A-L-U-M-B-O. And there are very well-known people from California in law enforcement at this meeting in Sacramento. And these are just a few sentences from the meeting. He said, "Project Safer California is one which is visualized nationwide." I might interject here with the minutes of the meeting that $100 million has been sent to California from the federal government in the last short while to just make up suggestions on crime. $100 million to be spent as a starter. Project Safer California is one which is visualized nationally. This is the minutes of the meeting. It came out of the National Advisory Commission report appointed by Nixon 2 years ago. I'm sorry, not 69. It was mid-1972, out of Nixon's National Advisory Commission's report. It was patterned after the military standard system in 69, but Nixon's Advisory Commission in 72. Project Safer California is a special program designed for California to establish standards and goals as California sees them. Project California is a 2-year project, and there are 700 recommendations. The research is accomplished with recommendations for California's needs. He went on to say, you will have all the resource material available as you need it. For the purposes of the project on the 2-year, we have $4 million grant from the federal government. There are no state dollars involved. Now, this was what was said at the meeting in July, but I know there's $100 million coming into California. He went on to say, Mr. Palumbo, the project staff will have 70 to 75 people, and we will have an attitude survey for every participant. This is to make sure they fit in the pattern or screen. We intend to have meetings all over the state. Now, these are through all the different lettered areas, so look in your newspapers and see. We intend to give it as much visibility as possible. That means publicity. We will get local TV already geared up. Newspaper reporters will give guided visibility. That means they'll lead you along the way and give the press releases of what's coming out. We hope you will assign a priority, not necessarily a lot of discussion or additional research. He's telling them, tell us the things you like, but don't give us a lot of guff and talk back to us or give your version of research. We don't want additional research. We'll give you 700 standards and you give us the priority, but we're not open for discussion. He said the national, now this is a beautiful sentence, the national government, this is Nixon's government in 72, has already established their perimeters. See, they're pouring in $100 million. He says, unless we do that for California, you can well expect that those perimeters will be imposed on us in some kind of a mandate. That is what we're trying to prevent. Now, let me translate that for you. The national government has established what they wanted. Richard Nixon in 1972 decided what he wanted for California, and he laid it down. Unless we do that, use theirs that have come to us, these standards, we can expect that those perimeters, meaning his, will be imposed upon us in a mandate. And that is what we're trying to prevent. In other words, they're trying to prevent a military dictatorship by saying, you have to take this and you have to take that. So the guided news media, the guided visibility that he talks about, and he says the guided visibility and the TV that are geared up will push what is desirable. I talked on the telephone to a gentleman today from the probation department who may be a guest on my program in another few weeks. And he told me he's working for the criminal justice planning, and he told me that they're liberalizing marijuana laws. A few of these little goodies are so superfluous. They're to make all the liberals think that this is a right-on criminal justice system, that you won't get harsh penalty for marijuana. And I told him it's like the Civil Rights Act in 1964 giving blacks certain rights. The Constitution granted the rights. You don't need a great thing in Congress to write down what's already in the Constitution. And I don't see why marijuana is any different than liquor. The adults, the parents drink liquor night and day and on the job. And they don't have any special bills or laws passed for them to have their liquor. So this little goodie about marijuana didn't appeal to me. And I don't think that the liberals or the left should think that it's a far-out system and give the publicity they're going to liberalize marijuana, you know, in certain communities and let these things slip through. There's going to be, like he says, the guided visibility. Well, I'll read you a few sections. I read some last week on the air, and I promise you those addresses I gave you. One of the things I mentioned was mass arrests are proposed in detail. There'll be plug-in radios to every car, home, and boat that are mandatory so that there's two-way. They can pick up the sound as well as you hear instructions from them anytime, like 1984. Private possession of handguns will be prohibited for all persons other than law enforcement and military personnel. Manufacture and sale of handguns will be terminated. All handgun collectors must be modified, their collections, and rendered inoperative. Existing handguns are to be acquired by the state. Law enforcement professions should be appointed to the federal communications system. The federal communications should have law enforcement professionals on it. The right to appeal your conviction is severely limited to only one review. If you are sent to prison and you want to appeal, you get one review, and that's all the entire proceedings will ever be allowed. Juries will no longer participate in any sentencing. The power will only be in the hands of the judges. Jury sizes will be reduced to 6 people. Teenagers from age 16 will be treated as adults. That was in the Los Angeles Times today. Evel Younger wants to start making criminals out of 16-year-olds. That was in the newspaper today. 16 will be treated as adults. They'll let you stay home and watch television, rapes and violence and murders and hangings and suicides and lynchings and all kinds of acts of criminal sort from the time you're born or 2 years old until you're 16. And then you copy one of them and you go off to jail. Well, you have TV for a teacher 24 hours a day. And when you're age 16, they say, now you're a man. Let's take you to jail. Jury duty is not to be considered any hardship, and there'll be very few excuses from jury duty, but there'll only be six on the jury, and that's all they need. And as I say, they'll have nothing to say about the sentencing. From time to time on the program, we'll be reading some more about Project Safer, maybe a little bit every week, 5 minutes every week. Write to Sacramento, as I say, and get your booklet on the Criminal Justice Department and your copies. It's the Bulletin Editor, Office of Criminal Justice Planning, 7171 Bowling Drive, Sacramento, California, 95823. And you can write for the big book on the 700 standards, Criminal Justice Standards, Goals and Recommendations, Stanford Research Institute, Menlo Park, California, 94025. If that goes too fast, you can write to me again to Box 3904 Carmel and send a self-addressed envelope, and I'll send you the address. Now, just to read to you for 1 or 2 minutes the bulletin. This is Bulletin, Office of Criminal Justice Planning, Volume 7, Issue 8, October 74. I just want to show you how much this already, there's 3 million in the state of California recommended, but there'd be 100 million sent in for this kind of machinery equipment. And mind you, this has nothing to do with job trainings. The federal government isn't interested in low cost housing, building homes, letting people be electricians, engineers, plumbers, carpet makers, build paths, concrete, make fences, roofs, all the unemployment rate could be solved by building these things. No, this is where the funding is going. Eureka Police Department, Evidence Technician and Mobile Investigation Van, $8,000. Humboldt County Legal Officer, $18,000. Corning Police Department Police Training Facility, $3,500. Shasta County Sheriff, $42,500. Chico Police Department Crime Prevention Coordinator, $15,000. District Attorney, a Legal Advisor to Law Enforcement, $14,000. Regional Communication System in Butte County, $139,000. Sacramento Police, Prevent Crime, Police Community Participation, $100,000. Yuba County Sheriff, Law Enforcement Radio Communication, $113,000. Yuba County Sheriff, Consolidation of Community Control Center Console, $50,000. Sutter County Sheriff, Law Enforcement Radio System, $132,000. Sierra County Sheriff Law Enforcement Radio Phase 2, $55,000. Placer County Sheriff Coroner Law Enforcement Radio Communications, $220,000. This is the sheriff and the coroner. Nevada County Sheriff, $156,000. Placer County Automated Criminal Records Retrieval System, $19,000. Yuba County Sheriff Closed Circuit TV for Jail, $6,000. The sums go on. Female Patrol Officer Project, $55,000. Department of Public Health Inebriate Diversion Program, $117,000. San Francisco Superior Court's Criminal Justice Information System, $108,000. San Francisco Police Expanded Controls, $15,000. Juvenile Court Communication System, $40,000. Courtroom Security Project, $63,000. Security Project. Courts Integrated Automated Microfilm Systems, $52,000. This book is an education. Order it. It's page after page. Santa Clara Vehicle Theft Project, $240,000. Automatic Traffic Citation, $111,000. Go into $100 million. This is $4 million to start in the state of California, and hardly a crumb to benefit mankind, to solve problems in the United States and really solve crime. Now, last week on Dialogue Conspiracy, I was going to talk about Richard Nixon and Ford and the pardon and the relationship to the John Kennedy assassination. I didn't put it off, but I want to talk about these other matters, so I'll do it next week for sure. This is the end for this week. Take care, and I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist May Brussel, who for 10 years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KELRB-FM in Carmel, California.